Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Welcome to the Mosaic Life Podcast.
Life is an art. Every moment a picture painted in time. The color, texture, lighting, all context. The Mosaic Life vision is to cast a warm glow on your masterpiece, highlighting the struggle while showcasing the culmination of years of hard work.
Join us for guided meditations, interviews with authors and leaders, and engaging conversation as we explore the depths of our consciousness. Welcome back to the Mosaic Life Podcast. I'm Trey.
And I'm Ernie.
Ernie, thanks for coming back, my friend.
Yeah.
Another conversation I'm excited about. I believe this is conversation number 5. The way we're doing this, it's exciting and it's new, and it's kind of hard to keep track of what those numbers are. So I think it's conversation number 5. So,
it is.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. And I'm excited. I'm excited that the topic of conversation we're about to get into.
Yeah. It feels good to be on number 5.
Yeah.
Because I can feel how much we're sinking into our own process, working together and recording and being diligent, being diligent in the way that we bring value to people.
And diligent and intentional.
Intentional.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's been exciting. We, at this point, again, we're in one of those situations where I don't know exactly when this is going to come out, but at this point we've released three meditations.
Yeah.
And 4 conversations. Or maybe it's the other way around. I don't know.
Four conversations and 3 meditations.
Yeah.
And every time, and this isn't to like toot our horn necessarily, but to pull forward the insight of how simple it can be to get better at something. We've only been doing this for like 2 months. And for me, it feels much different than it felt when we started.
Yeah, and you carry yourself differently. I remember prior to the start of the first one, I wouldn't say you were scared. That's the wrong word, but
that's
you were
a perfect word for it, honestly.
You were excited. You were nervous. Yeah. You were kind of bouncing off the walls. You were worried about your cadence. And I'm telling you, I mean, you not only are you a natural fit for this, but I'm not going to say you have people of all types swooning over your voice and your meditations. So I don't want to get you in trouble with anybody. So
I save that voice specifically for my wife.
There you go. Yeah. But no, people, there's a certain tenor to relaxing voices. I was not lucky enough to get that, in my opinion.
That's not true. Hold on. This is good that you bring this up. I didn't have that either. If you talk to anybody, that knew me from grade school to, 27, 26,
I don't know.
I've always talked fast. I've always been loud, boisterous. And my first coach, his name's Gary Mahler, fucking beautiful dude. Every time I talked to him, just listening to his voice calmed me down.
That's fantastic.
And so this is a decision that I'm making in my life to present myself in a way that calms people down. That's something I'm deliberately trying to work on constantly. So it is working, but it's not necessarily something that you're born with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you, again, to your credit, you are very good at that. I'm sure I've probably mentioned this at some point in the prior conversations, but especially when speaking candidly, quote unquote, off the record, there are times, especially on the phone, where I will wonder if I lost you, if the phone call dropped, because you are intentionally taking time to consider your response, and to do so thoughtfully, which I truly, truly appreciate.
Yeah. I mean, it's good to give space to anything.
It is.
Especially in conversation.
It is.
To have space for somebody to think.
Yes.
And add to it.
I agree.
Develop thoughts. It's a process.
Yeah.
And which is a good segue into what we're talking about today.
Yes.
In process. Did you have something else?
Prior. Yes. Yeah, so I want to make sure we get all the administrative stuff out of the way.
Okay.
But for one thing, we sit here on November 13th and November 14th, we're doing something really, really exciting. And I understand by the time you're hearing this, it's going to be probably a month removed. But tomorrow, Ernie and I are host. Well, I shouldn't say Ernie's hosting his first. Ernie and I, as a collective unit, as a podcast, as a budding business, are hosting our first live meditation, which I'm so thrilled about. We've got a fantastic partner who's hosting us, Melissa at MyoCore in Powell, Ohio, and we've got 12 eager registrants ready to come out and learn more about meditation and to practice mindfulness with us.
Yeah, and have we been advertising, so to speak, this on our Instagram?
We haven't because it was limited space and we just kind of, it was kind of word of mouth and it was Melissa's patience a little bit too. So we didn't really need to.
That's true. Okay.
We will.
Yeah, we will. And so if, because of the retroactive style of our podcast, we're recording and releasing, you know, 2 or 3 weeks in the future. If you're interested in some of the things we have coming up, other meditation classes, courses, retreats in 2020, then follow our Instagram and keep tabs on what we post, because then you can have the chance to come and join us for some of these things.
That is the best way to do that right now. And you can find us on Instagram at One Mosaic Life, or if you just search for the Mosaic Life podcast. It is my full intention to build a website for us in 2020 where we can release added thoughts through blogs, and also give you an opportunity to sign up for email lists so we can stay in contact with you. So right now, Instagram, it's One Mosaic Life, and our website, or our landing page rather, where you can check out and subscribe to our podcast, is onemosaic.life.
Yeah, the Instagram's really good. Check it out.
It is. It's been a learning experience. I'm not going to speak for you, but it has been very much a learning experience for me, putting myself out there in ways that I haven't in the past. So,
yeah. And it's going great.
Yeah. I will say your recent post, and you're welcome to talk a little bit more about it, but your post from your recent trip was awesome. People seem to love that as well.
The one in regards to the meditation?
About the photo of you out in nature.
I don't know, man.
You don't know what I'm talking about?
Just the picture itself?
Just the picture and the story behind it, too. Hmm.
I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know which one.
You're in the mountains. Like, it's from your recent trip, right?
Yeah.
The
story behind it. Okay, we must have talked about this, didn't we?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay. I'm trying to put the pieces together because in the post, I didn't actually speak about it. I just got back from a 4 or 5 day desert retreat with 54 incredible dudes. I overuse the word dude. I mean, these were men, powerful men.
Yeah.
And for 4 days we dropped in, and synchronized our frequency, man. It was incredible. And as a result, it was like, and this is what I imagine happening tomorrow. And I mentioned this in the first conversation, when groups of people get together and synchronize their hearts, so to speak.
Yeah.
Literally, though, like the frequency that we're emitting, this electromagnetic field, it makes room for powerful transformation. In a way that it doesn't have to be spoken or understood, but it just kind of like things turn, like gears start to slip into place simply by being in that place and doing a specific kind of work that aligns everyone. And that's what we did for 5 days. Not only were we completely dropped in and in tune with each other, but we were in the middle of the desert, so we had no access to a phone, internet. So we didn't get to leave that frequency. You know, like, it's easy to step away from a meditation class and then go right back into your phone.
Yeah.
You kind of like counteract some of that stuff, or maybe not, but you're susceptible to it,
yeah.
You know, as you step back into the real world, so to speak. But we didn't have that. We didn't step away from it at all. We were in it for 4 days straight.
That's awesome.
Powerful stuff, man. And I feel like a new man. Yeah. And that picture in regards to meditation 3 was me on top of a mountain on the drive back to LA from the desert when I was just feeling like a child, man. It was awesome.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. I appreciate sharing that story. And, I love seeing that part of you, and you know, I hope to continue seeing that part of you grow. And I'd love to. At this point, I'm living vicariously through you in that regard. One of the goals that I set out for myself is to go on a retreat in the next year, and so I do have plans to do so. But I love hearing that.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. So as you were trying to seg a little bit ago, in which I kind of derailed that.
I should have had a better boundary with you derailing my process there.
Yeah, right. What we're trying to do, at least in my mind, in the narrative I'm crafting, is we're trying to, with these conversations, broach subjects that they aren't always easy to talk about with yourself and your loved ones, or just in everyday conversation. And we're trying to have conversations that people think about, they feel, they don't always know how to articulate that. And so part of that kind of flows seamlessly into boundaries and setting those not only for yourself, but for others around you. And we usually try to brainstorm ideas for topics a few days prior to, so we can discover and reflect upon what they mean to us. And so Ernie came up with the idea for boundaries, and I'd like to let you kind of lead into that and tell me a little bit about where this comes from.
Yeah. So I've got, this is coming from my current exploration. So this isn't necessarily me coming as a master of boundaries, but I had a recent understanding, and I thought, this is great. We can dive into it together. I can learn more. You can learn more, and we can do research, and then we can bring it together in this conversation. But for me, what I'm noticing is as I really align with my purpose, then the excess or the meaningless stuff starts to show itself, or I start to notice it. So as I become more clear in what I want to create, more clear in who I want to be, more clear in what I'm willing to accept from the people around me, the world around me, anything outside of that is very noticeable. Mm-hmm. It's like something comes up. It's like, oh, that's not part of my process.
Right.
That's not part of my life. That's not part of my purpose. This could be with people, with other people, the types of conversations they're having or the way they're speaking to you. This could be self boundaries. Like, I don't let myself get to this point, or something like that. But the idea behind this is how to preserve the processes. So once I've figured out, I know that I need practice or meditation in my life. I know that I also care a lot about my family.
Right.
I know that I have a job. I know that I have a business. Right. How do I preserve each element in a way that it serves me and remains useful for an extended period of time, for the rest of my life, maybe.
So
where are the boundaries? Starting to notice, like, when I'm at my edge with something, or when something is coming into my edge and it needs to, like, back up a little bit, or a person even. So there are many layers to boundaries. The word could be we could have this conversation for days, but that's where it's coming from for me.
Right. So there's a lot of follow-up to that. I guess first and foremost, it's establishing those boundaries. I think even before that is knowing where those boundaries lie, because you can't say that you want something in your life but you have to know what it is. You have to know where to draw the line. You have to know what is it that is going to create a toxic feeling and what's going to create a positive feeling. So how do you know where to draw that line? How do you know, okay, this person is not contributing positively to my life? And the thing is, what makes it difficult is that not everything or nothing is black and white. There are 52 shades of gray or 50 or whatever that I don't know. And so some things lean better, some things lean worse. And it's where is that line in the sand where you say everything, the shade and darker, has to fall back. Mm. So it's you have to, I guess, first and foremost, how do you know where to establish those boundaries?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So you're saying we need to know where it begins and ends. Yeah. I mean, do you have a specific process for yourself?
So I feel, and I guess this is fair warning, over the next year, I'm going to be reflecting back a lot on my goal, my year of sobriety, which I think I talked about on the last conversation, which comes out this Sunday. There are things that I have been wanting to accomplish in my life for a long time, and there are certain goals that I have for myself. And I had to ask myself, okay, what is it that's holding me back from these goals? And one of those things, one of those major things, is alcohol. I would certainly not consider myself an alcoholic. I don't struggle with alcohol, but I do know that when it comes to drinking alcohol, I'm not the type of person that can have one glass of wine with dinner. I have the tendency to one glass turns into two, turns into four, turns into the bottle. It is what it is. It's not like I do that every night. It's just, I don't enjoy just having one glass of wine is what I'll say. And so whether it's having a bottle of wine and being ruined for the rest of the night and part of the next day, or going out and with the intention of having one or two beers, having five, spending five times more than I wanted to, which sets back my financial goals, that I realized was a problem. So the boundary that I recently drew was alcohol has to be removed from the equation. And so with that, I laid out the 10 audacious goals that I want to accomplish over the next year. And so that is the one piece that I was able to say, okay, this is poison to me, essentially. This is toxic. This is counterproductive to what I want to accomplish. And so I'm drawing the line right here. Now, as I was trying to establish, I might not have been saying it very well. That's not always an easy line to establish. Maybe it's a family member, someone whom you do or should love, but they hold a victim complex, or they are always complaining, or they're always negative, or it's just they are not good people to be around. Creating distance can be a difficult thing to do because they are family. So that sort of boundary is a little bit more difficult to distinguish.
Yeah. And honestly, for me, it's like tiptoeing on both, not tiptoeing, actually, it's almost like when assessing a boundary and trying to figure out where it lies, it's like teetering hard right and then teetering hard left and then finding that middle ground.
Right.
So you could just choose boundaries, or I could just choose boundaries and say, because I read a book that said people shouldn't talk like this, I'm going to create a boundary. I'm going to create a boundary, and when people say that to me, I'm going to do this thing. And that might work.
Do you mind if I make a quick aside?
Sure.
And if you don't mean to mention this, I won't. But prior to recording, we talked a little bit about what boundaries had meant to you, and the, I guess they can be stigmatized either in your own mind or with other people. Is that something you're willing to talk about, and how, why you feel that way?
Yeah, I mean, if I can articulate it, most of the things that I'm doing now in my life, if I were, when I was 18, 19, 20, I would have said that's girly or something.
Mm-hmm.
To put on a playlist and cry for 20 minutes, I would have never thought that.
Yeah,
I would do that,
right? Because that was a boundary you had set up for yourself.
I mean, it's just a belief that I had about the way things worked, and
yeah,
and my judgments for people. Who knows where it came from? I mean, I have ideas, but Yeah, so the word just rung to like being a feminine thing, which I've also learned is actually very welcomed in a masculine being as well.
Certainly.
So yeah, I mean, there was this idea around boundaries that I can't quite put my finger on it, but it just felt gross or like girly or less than manly to have boundaries. Like, stop right there. This is my boundary. It just felt very, what I want to say is like hardcore feminist.
Okay.
I don't know. These are judgments that I've made in my life.
No, it's interesting. And I wanted to bring it up because, we often have these ideas in our minds that the world sees things one way, but without articulating it, I guess once you do, you discover that it's only seen that way in your world. It was surprising to me to hear that feeling you held toward boundaries because I had never considered it. I certainly do think I have boundaries, and I think I've been more firm in establishing them over the last several years. And there's, you know, hopefully we come to discover there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. So, no, I wanted to hear that, and I wanted to...
I imagine this is me making up a story that I was probably uncomfortable with somebody who set a boundary with me, mm-hmm. and they probably used the word boundary. You know what I mean? This is how things get set in our system.
I do, yeah.
It's like one moment,
yeah,
and then suddenly that thing is bad. But the point that I was making when bringing it up is I really want to make this work accessible to men and women.
Yeah.
And I guess I have this vendetta to make it accessible to the 21-year-old me for some reason, which I think is a valuable endeavor. If there's a way for me to bring these ideas to light in a way that somebody who has a traditional masculinity viewpoint in the world, in a way that they could practice these things and understand them and realize the value in their life, then fuck yeah, like that's great.
Yeah.
Because then this would help more people. But that was just the thought behind it.
You know, I'm going to go off on a slight tangent just because it makes me think of something. So you say you want to make this accessible for the 21-year-old you, mm-hmm. Which I think is noble, but following a conversation I had last week, so one of my climbing friends, she's actually a 17-year-old high school girl, which sounds weird. There's nothing weird there, but it sounds weird, and I get it. But she listened to our episode on habits, and she articulated to me, and she's a smart girl, she articulated to me that she thinks habits are a waste of time. She thinks that tying yourself into a habit only leads to misery. And I tried to argue with her that, you know, establishing a routine and habits in my life for the past couple of years has been one of the best things in my life that I could do for myself. And then suddenly I just realized, okay, I'm literally twice as old as her. At 17, there was no way in hell I was going to wake up early to meditate or to work out. I was drifting through life because I had the opportunity to do so. So like the idea of creating habits for a healthier life at the age of 17, which I'm not saying is impossible. I still stand by, you know, creating that structure for yourself is important. I just don't want you to get tied up in thinking that, you know, 21-year-old Ernie should have the boundaries if he's only going to rebel against them. The point that I'm trying to make is that the one single thing that I've realized, that I have as a takeaway over the past 3 years, is that nobody is going to change unless they want to. You cannot force somebody to change. You can show them the string to the blinds to open the window so they can see the light, but they have to do it themselves.
Yeah, totally. I don't necessarily. I completely agree with that, 100%. And that's true. I was rebelling against boundaries that were created for me. I guess in my mind, and I'm not just speaking of boundaries when I talk about making this, the level of development that I'm learning that has to deal with emotions, mindset, and structures and boundaries and things like this. Making that accessible. I want to string in that 21-year-old person. There's a message that only you can bring to the world. Like, there's a message that and people need to hear it from you.
Right.
And so I feel like that's the service that I'm doing by looking at, the apprehensions that I have from my youth around the things that I'm learning to be valuable now, and how to join those things, because then from that is going to, and I feel it happening. I'm writing a lot lately, and it's going to open doors for people who may be at similar places, or maybe they were in that place and they're just past it and they need to hear it now, right? They're ready for the message now. So joining those assumptions and those beliefs that I had about boundaries or whatever with what I realized to be powerful and true, as far as processes and development go, is me doing my service, me bringing my message, me being purposeful.
And I do want to be clear, going back to what I said, I stand by the fact that no one is going to change unless they want to. But I hope that this, what we're doing with this podcast, and to your point that you literally just made, will help people see that metaphorical drawstring and help them see the light in their own eyes, so they can see that what they need to do to create this boundary, so they can create the change that they want to be in this world. So yes, I really, really think that what we're doing is valuable.
I think that brings up like another topic of boundaries when you were talking about rebelling against boundaries, I think is what you said. And then the conversation you had with the young lady, I kind of blanked earlier when you asked me, so how do you like create those boundaries with people? Because I'm still working on that.
Yeah.
I'm still working on that. There are a lot of conversations that drain me and I don't create boundaries. Like, hey, I love you, but I just don't want to have this conversation now.
Right.
Or I just need some space.
Yeah.
Right. I just don't want to, whatever, X, Y, Z. I'm still working on how to do that to conserve my energy. Right. But the boundaries that are most, relevant for me right now are the boundaries that I create in my life in pursuit of my goals, in pursuit of my purpose. Boundaries for myself, boundaries for my time, because what I'm learning is if we can enact certain boundaries, then it gives us the room to play. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, you want to, people say, stay outside the box. Great. That's awesome. And then there's also a certain security to having certain boundaries. So for instance, if I'm feeling sad or afraid, I could take that into the world and treat people from a place of sadness and fear and then maybe hurt people. So one boundary I have is, I don't mistreat my family. And so when I notice something's happening and I'm starting to that point where I could say something or do something that would hurt our relationship, with my wife or my kids, that's a boundary. Boom. That's very clear to me now. I step back. And then another way in addition to that I use boundaries is I learn how to process my emotions.
Yeah.
But I do it with boundaries. I do it with a clear structure now.
And so to that point, yeah, you know, this conversation started not necessarily just around boundaries, but for processes as well. And so the process, at least for me, and I'd like you to expound upon that as well, for creating those boundaries for your emotions, first and foremost, at least for me, is recognizing them, not ignoring them, not suppressing them, but just acknowledging them. I'm upset right now. Okay, why? I'm upset right now because somebody just said something that offended me. Okay, why? Was it intentional? Did they do it in passing? Did they not think twice about it? Just keep asking why. If you can break down what it was that elicited an emotional reaction from you, I have to assume, at least for myself, that 9 times out of 10, you're going to realize that what was said or what had happened to you is completely benign. Nothing foul was meant from it, and you can move on. But you didn't suppress that emotion. You didn't suppress that feeling. And you also responded to it. You didn't react to it. That's a big distinction. You responded to it and you realized that this is not going to hurt you. There was no malintent. I can move on. The big key there is responding, not reacting. So that is my interjection as to how, you know, emotional boundaries are set by me. And I'm curious, you know, how are you setting your emotional boundaries?
In terms of
what? In terms of, you know, you were just speaking about your family and, you know, if they, you know, if something had happened, you know, instead of getting upset or reacting, you have that boundary there to know that that's not something that you want to do.
And how do I do those?
Yeah. How do you create those boundaries?
Yeah. By fucking up.
Like, okay.
The many times in my past where I've said things that have hurt people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, noticing when I decided I was going to find a different way, by noticing the rising or the bubbling of that process in my body that brought me to the place where I would say things that would hurt somebody. So by making big mistakes, and then deciding to do differently and watching how I and habitually or unconsciously made those mistakes, and then choosing, okay, now it's like, okay, I'm about to say something that isn't true and that could be hurtful. Actually, it's even further back now. You know, it came, but to that point, like, oh, I'm about to say something angry to my wife or my kids, and
so
I'll leave the room, right? And then now it's I've developed a process even before that,
right?
Where, oh, okay, now my chest is getting tight. Now I remember from the many times that this has happened that first my chest gets tight, then everything starts feeling like it's rushing, and then I get angry, and then I say something. So it's a noticing, I guess, after many failures.
So weird metaphor. You went from somebody barging into your house, guns blazing, to somebody ringing the doorbell, to you seeing somebody on your doorbell camera pulling into the driveway.
Yeah.
So you have time to react, you have time to prepare and then respond, as opposed to letting something bubble up and then you reacting.
Totally. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's exactly what it used to feel like.
Yeah.
Like out of nowhere, boom, guns are blazing.
And the process, you have to acknowledge it. That is, if I've learned anything, you have to acknowledge how you're feeling with a neutral mind. You may be angry, just acknowledge that you're angry. If you're sad, acknowledge that you're sad with a completely objective mind.
Yeah. Yeah. We could turn this whole conversation into another conversation about meditation.
We could. I mean, I agree.
Because how have you learned to do that, Trey? From meditating, it's
absolutely
you learn to be the conscious viewer of things that are happening, the processes that are habitual and unconscious. It's like, here we go again. Let's talk for another hour about meditation.
I agree. I mean, you're absolutely right. Everything that we talk about could come back to meditation and to, you know, observing from an outside perspective, you know, what is going on and up there in your head. A lot of it for me goes back to the Stoic philosophy and, you know, choosing not to be harmed and you won't have been. You have power over nothing except for the way in which you respond to a certain situation. I know it's a very fine point, and I think it was made in Dan Harris's book, 10% Happier, but the idea of responding versus reacting. If you really break it down, there's a huge difference. Reacting is emotional. It's you know, off the cuff. Responding is acknowledging where things are coming from and doing so, I guess, respectfully.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you're absolutely right. It's all tied together. The mindfulness, the meditation. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, just being separate from it, that alone is the practice, it feels like. so that would be another boundary that I have is being wrapped up in the emotions, like rolling with the waves rather than being planted as the waves are moving.
Right.
Yeah.
So you spoke a bit about your boundaries in your own mind with your emotions and your family. What day to day boundaries have you set? Maybe with yourself, maybe with colleagues, with peers. I mean, you're obviously very passionate, very motivated. So that takes a special type of person with a special type of mindset. And so what are some of the systems and processes you've put in place to, you know, maintain those clear boundaries?
I don't think I'm special.
You are.
I do think I'm passionate.
You are passionate. You are special.
But if anybody listening to this thinks that there's a special characteristic about me, they're wrong. You know,
Ernie's a special guy.
Well, the point being is, I've had to create processes to take advantage of what gifts I have.
Yes.
And there's nothing special about me in comparison to anybody else.
I mean,
and this is going to sound so cliche, but like, I was so fucking depressed, dude, when I was 21 years old, and I never thought I knew I wanted something, but I never thought I would get there. So I had to start somewhere, and it feels special now. And like, you met me in a different chapter.
For sure.
And it feels special because I can like laser beam this shit into the world. But
call it what you want. Call it special, call it unique. I mean, it's certainly something. And we are here to help people get past that point. But it is something that so many people, they skate through life, you know, just taking it as it is. And I was just reflecting to myself the other day that, you know, it's so much fun nowadays to figure out how I can make my life better. And they're these small processes and the quote unquote life hacks, or to be a little bit more, but the biohacks, you know, there's certain things that I've been able to do to manufacture my own happiness and contentedness. And it's just, I don't know. You and I briefly had a text message conversation the other day about a mission statement for the podcast. And, yeah. we didn't really continue that conversation, but I would like to at some point. But, I can't remember what I said, something along the lines of trying to combat the toxicity of work, trying to combat the toxic work and life environment, or something along those lines. Because
what you said, I think, is to combat the oppressing toxicity of work and life environment, or
something like that.
The oppression of toxic work and life.
Yes. Yeah.
So fighting the oppression of toxic environments.
And it's through no fault of anybody's, but I don't want to say every, I don't want to generalize, but the majority of people I talk to, they're miserable 9 to 5. And then again, 9 to bedtime. And it's just, you know, going to sleep with that anxiety of having to get up the next morning because they hate their job, but they have to do it to pay for the food. And I have forced myself, I've finessed myself in a position where I've been able to escape that. And I want to see everybody have, not necessarily maybe the self-employment aspect of it, but to have the same contentedness. Mm. And you can get into, you know, things like universal basic income. You can get into, you know, 4-day work weeks. You know, what is it that would give people that same level? And everybody is different, but there are tools that you can use to get to a point where you don't have to be miserable.
Yeah. You know, I feel really sad when I think about people, when you say people that go from 9 to bedtime. And it goes back to the not being special thing. There's so many reasons that we can believe that what we see other people doing is impossible. Like,
sure.
There's so many reasons that we can make up about it. It's this job, it's this relationship, whatever. And it's excruciating. Like, I remember it.
Oh, yeah. There's one job that I can think of where I would just go to bed on a Sunday night with knots in my stomach.
Yeah.
Because I did not want to get up and go see my boss that next day. It was awful.
Yeah, it's excruciating. And what comes up as you talk about toxic environments is, like, how excruciating it is to think that everything around us is causing the pain. Because we start to believe, I started to believe, you know, as I moved into adulthood and was traversing these different challenges with money and relationships and what I thought was love and just being allowed to go buy beer and I could choose to drink or I could choose to study, like, there's all this stuff going on around me, and when it started getting really hard, the only thing that I could thought that was, like, causing it was the shit around me. Like, it's these people, it's this place, it's this job, it's this town, it's XYZ outside of me. And so it's sad. Like, it's not sad. I feel sad when I think about this and I think about people doing that and the people that I interact with where I wish I could just be like, no, man, you can, if only you could see it, like, and working to get people to see that for themselves, that it's not the other shit. It's not the environment. It's not the people. It's not the money you do or don't have, that it's literally all the toxicity within ourselves.
Right.
That's keeping us from feeling good and keeping us from doing the shit that we want to do and keeping us from creating the things we want to create and being the person we want to be. And so instead of going too far on that tangent, I'll bring it back. And this is the importance of boundaries for me, or I believe in the world. Because we have to know what's good inside of us. Mm-hmm. We have to be able to feel what's good inside of us.
You have to know your value.
You have to know your value. I mean, like if you're in a toxic environment or you claim to be in a toxic environment, then it's on you. And there's a boundary for you to create. And if you're in a relationship that isn't fulfilling for you, then it's on you to create that relationship or to leave that relationship and the boundaries that you create for that.
Absolutely. And to get a little bit more granular, delving more into the employment side of things, if you feel as if you're in a toxic work environment because your boss is asking you to work 60 or 70 hours a week, you can create the boundary of saying, no, I will, you know, these are the hours in which I'll work. That's a fine line to walk. Some bosses will say, all right, well, you can, you know, find a new place of employment. Others hopefully will respect you. But if you are creating that boundary where you don't want to work more than 50 hours per week, then you are saying, okay, this is not the right place for me. And so I'm going to find something that is better suited for not only what I do, but to appreciate the value that I bring. And you can do that with any aspect of your life. If you're not happy because the relationship you're in, I don't know, this is a stupid example. You know, you're not getting out enough. You're watching too much TV. You're too content, or too what's the right word? Complacent is the right word. You're too complacent. So you can create that boundary. You can have that conversation. Maybe it's just a matter of enlightening somebody else to say, hey, listen, I'm not happy with the way things are. Can we change them? And that is the process. That is the beginning process of creating that boundary with you and that person, you, that employer, you and whatever other element in the world that is bringing negativity into your mind.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what it is. I'm trying to think back to when I felt the worst in my life and ways that I was neglecting my boundaries. Like, as you now have firm structure in your life, mm-hmm. or more firm structure.
Right.
How are you avoiding setting boundaries when you were in the place that you didn't feel as good about your life as you do now?
So previously, how was I avoiding setting boundaries?
Yeah. So in your process, in life and in the people that you hung out with and the places that you went and how you spent your time.
Right.
I imagine, and I'm making this up, that you knew what you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And you, in the back of your mind, you kind of knew what you had to do to get there.
Right.
You just weren't doing it.
Right.
So what are some of the ways that you avoided setting boundaries for yourself and the people around you?
Yeah. So that's a very interesting question. And I'm probably going to answer it in a roundabout way. You may have got this from a point earlier in the podcast, but I tend to be rather all or nothing. Whether it's, you know, if it's a glass of wine, it's a whole bottle, or if it's, you know, cutting back my drinking, it's cutting out my drinking. It's just, I'm a very all or nothing person. And I've got my tracker. I think I've been sober for 27 days now. And in those 27 days, I've realized in the midst of pursuing my 10 goals that I am very goal oriented, and you know, the things that I'm striving to do, you know, the simple ones that are easy to explain, you know, doing a split to become a better climber, having the intention behind stretching, doing hours worth of stretching every night, it just seems that much more fulfilling to me because I know there's a goal at the end of the road. It's not just, something I'm doing casually. That's a problem that I have always had. You know, I've always considered myself a runner, but unless I have a big race, you know, in 3-4 months, then I'm just going to go out and casually run, you know, 7 or 8 miles per week. It's never been, you know, but a couple of years ago when I had 2 half marathons on the calendar, I was running I don't want to use this word, but I was running religiously. I was running, you know, with the pure intent of, okay, I'm going to break my personal record. I'm going to do this as well as I possibly can. So I'm a very goal-oriented person. And then to go back to your original point, how did I avoid that accountability in my life? I think one of the longest standing goals I've had was writing a book. And I finally did so a couple years ago. But leading up to that, you know, I always told myself, oh, well, let's just get some more life experience. Let's, you know, figure out what this thing we call life is all about. And then I'll, you know, once I have that experience and I'll be able to write it. But, you know, the time came when I was 30 years old and, you know, I realized I still hadn't written more than a couple of short stories here and there. And I finally realized that, you know, what I wanted to do is never just going to happen overnight. I actually have to put in the work and, you know, make it a goal to be accomplished. And so, same vein as being all or nothing, I wrote my first book. Again, I haven't done much with it yet, in 30 days as part of the National Novel Writing Month, which was a great experience. So,
when you were on Sunday night, when you're getting ready to go to bed with knots in your stomach,
right?
What would you have, if you were to like travel back in time and shake the living crap out of that tray,
right,
and say like, just do this, this, and this? Like, what comes to mind? What would you tell? What would you tell him?
So with the intention of, I guess with what intent, with what end game in mind?
Waking him up. Like,
okay. Like, so to, okay.
I guess the where I'm going with this, I'll go this route instead. People probably need boundaries in their life.
They do.
For me, I need boundaries in what I eat and how I eat.
Right.
So this goes from the boundary of, I eat between 10 a.m. and 7 p.m.
Yeah.
It goes to the boundary of how fast I eat, like how mindful I am of eating. Then people might need boundaries around their money. Like, this is how much money I spend in a week.
Yeah.
This is my boundary. People might need boundaries around the amount of time they spend watching Netflix. Or when they get to watch Netflix, like, these priorities are done, right, and now here's the amount of time I can. That people probably need these types of things in their life.
Right.
And again, this is me imagining for other people the experience that I had, but when I'm watching Netflix and I should be doing something else, or I know I could be doing something else, and by neglecting that, I'm pushing out some type of pain or, you know, upset into the future because I wasn't working on that other thing. You know, I knew that in the moment when I'm,
right,
I know those things. When you're eating the Twinkie, you know that you didn't want to do this earlier today, and now you're fucking eating it. Like, so my hope is, for some reason in this moment, the thought comes up is, I wonder if we can dig into how we talked ourselves out of boundaries, or how we neglected to create those boundaries, or what was in our life that kept us from honoring what we knew was true for us and was asking for expression in the way that we eat, the way that we talk, the way that we treat people. And we talked ourselves out of it, because there are probably people that are going to listen to this. They're like, it's going to be fucking easy for them to say, oh, I need that boundary.
Right.
Like, they could make the list right now. But,
well, I can tell you right now that's why. And I'm generally going to speak as an audience of one. I can tell you why a lot of times I would have 2, maybe 3 glasses of wine, or why maybe sometimes I watch 2, maybe 10 episodes of a show. It's because I'm displacing reality. There are certain things that I don't want to approach head on, whether it's work, whether it's a piece of anxiety. A lot of times anxiety is so detrimental. Having the alcohol to numb that anxiety, or having another universe to live in for a few hours, will help push that to the back of your mind. And, you know, pushing that anxiety back obviously pushes responsibilities back, pushes accountability back. That is, it's an escape. It's a way to find subtle relief. You know, it's an addictive way of going about things. I mean, you know, hardcore drug users, they'll use it to, you know, escape the reality of a situation. It's the same instrument, just dulled down.
Yeah. So escapism is definitely is something that you're yes. familiar with.
Yeah.
Me too. And pushing, and what you're saying is pushing back an anxiety or a feeling of something.
Yeah. You know, this, so the longest, you know, certainly since I turned 21, perhaps before, the longest amount of time I ever spent without alcohol was, I think, 4.5 months, a year or two ago, the first half of a year, basically, or first third of a year. And I remember two things changing about myself. One, my memory got better. I was, the cognitive effects were amazing. I was more clear headed. I was able to remember certain things and focus much better. Secondly, I was forcing myself to deal with problems head on. I noticed myself being more brazen, more willing to tackle issues that I had in my life. Because I couldn't numb them. I couldn't dull them. I couldn't dull that sharp edge. And when you do that, when you take the power away from them, you realize how strong willed you really are and how capable you are of dealing with the reality of whatever situation you face.
Yeah, because it really, what it feels like is it's not creating boundaries that we have trouble with, but it's holding those boundaries and honoring those boundaries that probably, this is again me making up for my own experience, but
I mean, if we're going to continue my weak metaphor, it's, you know, a boundary would be a door. To push back the boundaries with alcohol would basically to be put up a sign that says, or that to take off your door and put a sign that says, please do not enter. Mm-hmm. You know, you're pushing it back. I mean, I don't know. It's like you're pushing a wave back. Like it's still gonna come. It's still gonna hit land. But you know, you may just be, you know, delaying that for a few seconds or a few hours.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what could be most relevant to people who are listening to this. Again, and I'll keep going down this rabbit hole just a bit. Knowing if you're listening to this, you know exactly what needs to be done. Like, there's no question. There's no question.
Right.
Like,
what's your goal? What is the biggest possible goal that you want to accomplish?
Right. So and so, or just all the goals, like you could just name it all. Like, we all know that we right. all know what we need to be doing or want to be doing to get to that thing. And then, okay, so now in that moment, in this moment, we've created boundaries. Okay. So if from this moment forward, those boundaries remained intact that mm-hmm. you driving in your car just created in your mind, then you will get that thing. Like it's almost impossible for it not to work out that way. You know that you want to be a certain weight, so you create boundaries around the way you eat. You create boundaries around the way you work out and take care of yourself. There's no question that you will get that thing.
And I think, you know, part of the fear in that is seeing that ultimate goal and knowing what, I guess, the level of commitment it will take. But my best advice is, what is the first step? What is the very first baby step? What can you do to take one step toward that goal? And in doing so, you set a boundary. And in doing so, you say, okay, today I'm not going to eat any sweets. Today I'm going to go for a 20-minute run. And it's taking things piece by piece and not being overwhelmed by one massive goal, but setting that clear boundary. Mm.
So something else is coming up now. This is good. This is really good. So boom, you've created your first step and you have some boundaries around what you're going to do. And mm-hmm. we've all done this, like gung ho, all or nothing. Like I'm in. No, that I'm not eating that cookie. I'm eating this. I'm not, right. You know, it's easy. The boundary's there. And then it's okay. So when boundaries fall apart, I don't know why I'm going down this, but it seems relevant.
Well, it seems like it's going to go back to the conversation that we released last was habits and commitment and recommitment. So I'm curious to hear.
Maybe so.
Goes. Yeah.
Cool. Yep. Maybe so. But anyways, then, so now you've created your boundaries. What has happened for me and what I think happens for a lot of people is there's a moment where there's a willingness to give up that boundary and to fall into whatever recklessness or whatever. Maybe it's the escapism or something like that. And this is, and I'm remembering now, this is kind of the inception of this idea for the podcast was process and boundaries, because we also have to preserve the boundaries through the processes that we have to have processes that we can
that are repeatable,
metabolize like whatever's happening so that we can reinforce that boundary in some way. Right. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. It does. And one point I want to make, because we keep landing on diet as you know, one of the boundaries you set, if you want to lose weight, if you want to get in better shape, and you talk about, you know, the instance where a boundary dissolves because, you know, we have a setback. That is the sole reason why I don't believe in cheat days. I think cheat days are a detriment to any goal that you set out to accomplish. They make you, you know, one sweet will make you say, okay, this isn't so bad. It's just, it dulls those boundaries. It lowers those walls. It lowers your defenses. And I don't know, again, I'm a very all or nothing type of person, but when people say that they are on a strict diet, but they still have cheat days, it blows my mind a little bit, because it is literally you're taking those boundaries and then you're lowering your defenses for what only may be one meal today, but next time it may be two meals, because you are rationalizing it in your mind. Oh, I, you know, ran X amount of miles this week. I deserve this. No, you deserve to accomplish the goal you set out to accomplish.
Yeah. So it, to be fair, that sounds like a boundary for you.
It is.
A cheat day is like, no, that's the boundary. Hard pass. Because I know a lot of incredibly healthy and physically fit people who have strong boundaries around their cheat days.
Yeah.
Right. And so there's a boundary within a boundary.
And I just heard Tim Ferriss talk about this. So that's why it's fresh in mind. Yeah. And Tim Ferriss, he's an athletic guy. So, you know, he is, but he's also one of the people who establishes very, very strong boundaries. You know, we probably fall short of idolizing him, but you know, he is one of the inspirations for, you know, what we set out to do and the way we live our lives. So, I guess my point is, you know, I don't know. Continue on. I feel like I'm getting on a tangent.
No, man, I'm riding with it. I'm just thinking of the best way to serve people in this.
Yeah.
Podcasting is hard. Or in this format, it's like we're trying to derive the best knowledge for you. That's authentic. And so. So whatever happens, happens. I'm riding the wave too. But I do think the hardest part for people, or myself, but also people that I've talked to, is preserving the boundaries.
Right.
It's like, so let me ask you, how do you preserve your boundaries? Like I'm amazed that you wake up and you turn on the cold water every single morning.
I do.
Well, and you get in.
It depends. Yes, I do.
Mostly?
No, I mean, it's always a cold shower. It's not every morning. It's sometimes at night. That's the point.
So you're saying you don't shower every day?
I shower every day. It's sometimes in the morning, sometimes at night.
Just kidding.
I shower every day.
No. Okay. So I'm amazed by the level of meticulous structure you have in your life.
Yeah.
I'm making a joke, but how do you preserve those boundaries for you?
I do think it goes back to, if I give myself an inch, I will take a mile.
Yeah.
It's just what I do. It's just who I am. I know myself, and I know that if I take one warm shower, I realize, oh, this isn't so bad. You know, what good is a cold shower actually doing for me every day?
Can I ask a different question?
Sure.
When the tides of life come piling in, mm-hmm. like this, maybe even it's a tsunami. It's not like the beautiful tide that you see.
Are you trying to jinx me? I don't know what you're about to say.
I mean, these things happen. Yeah. Like maybe it's like a half tsunami. It won't be that bad. When you're emotionally charged.
Yeah.
How do you keep things from falling apart?
Sure. Meditation, man.
Yeah. Sweet. Very simple.
I don't know if we had this conversation recently or not. There's so many. Okay, doesn't matter. Meditation is a practice. It's not something you do when you want to simply relax. It's not something you do on an occasion when you want to find some clarity. It's something you do every day so you're prepared for those waves. So you know how to deal with the detriments of living a life that isn't just yourself. You can be mindful. You can respond to a situation as opposed to react to it. And you can reflect on any negative feelings that you have due to a situation. Again, that is the only control we have over our lives is how we react to situations. And so that meditation is the practice of doing that.
Mm.
So if it comes to emotional reactions.
Yeah.
For that particular example, meditation is it.
And so this is hard for me to comprehend at this moment, just because I'm imagining myself in the tsunami of emotions, and mine can get really intense. And it's interesting that we're going to have a conversation with Lisa soon because,
And quick aside, yeah. One thing we didn't mention in the beginning is that for anybody who's just exploring this podcast, there are, as of right now, three types of episodes. One is meditation, Ernie and his beautiful angelic voice. There's these conversations such as you're hearing right now. And then the third element are interviews with people who are literally experts in their fields, help people become better, or even people who have overcome large obstacles. And so we do have our first interview scheduled to record at the end of November. I don't want to give too much away because it's on the books, but I just want to make sure that it happens. She's a therapist and she is extremely smart, and she helps people through tough situations with mindfulness, with Buddhism, and with meditation. So
So she's specifically a dialectical behavior therapist.
Yes,
DBT for short. And part of the theory behind that is that humans have varying levels of intensity of this wave of emotions. So whereas John over here can be in a traffic jam and he's just like, okay, I'm late for work.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess that's frustrating. That guy just cut me off. But it's whatever. Like, it just doesn't feel like that he's not saying that, but that's the temperature of his emotions at the moment.
I can relate with it.
And then there's Ernie, you know, or somebody else, you know, that has this just the smallest thing kind of like sends this uptick, and it's this huge spiral of emotions. The intensity of it's different. It's the same thing, but the intensity is different. And part of the theory behind DBT is how to shift that for people, how to allow people to recognize that uprising and that upheaval of energy and how to manage it. But the point being is I've had to learn different ways to process because mine's intense, like when it rises. So it's hard for me to understand the idea of just sitting in meditation mm-hmm. when I'm in an intense, like I'll say traumatic response of sadness or anger or fear or shame or whatever. So I'm trying to like pinpoint for you where this process happens. Like when you're in intense emotion, is it because you've meditated that you're able to manage it? Or is it, oh, I'm in intense emotion, now I meditate?
I think, you know. I see, I don't want to call it a hang up. I think I see where, I guess the where it's being misconstrued.
No, I'm just trying to find clarity.
No, absolutely.
For the people listening, you know?
That's no, it. I mean, I haven't articulated it. So You are saying it in a way that in which I am in intense emotion. I don't get to that point.
Yeah, great.
I just don't get to that point. I've trained it. I've teased it out of me. It does not, with the very rare circumstance of my cell phone or some electronic device malfunctioning, I do not get emotional like that.
Sweet.
Yeah.
You said with respect to technology malfunctioning.
Yes, I can't like my stupid phone. Like it's doing this thing where it keeps resetting, and it pisses me off to no end. But you know, when it comes to interpersonal communication and reactions, like it doesn't faze me. Like it's like.
What happens with that anger? Does it go anywhere? Does it affect your day? Does it travel into other elements, or are you able to process that in some way
with the electronics?
Yeah,
I just put it down and walk away. It's like a child throwing a temper tantrum. Like you do your own thing over here. I'll come back in 15 minutes, and then you can work your shit out. 9 times out of 10, it does. So
you're saying through meditation, then you have established a way of being without that uprising of emotion now.
Yes,
great. Yeah.
That is. I know when we first talked about that, that is the Stoic philosophy in a nutshell. It really is. I'm able to articulate it better now. It is choosing how to respond to situations and realizing that is under your control.
Yeah. For me, and it's constantly evolving. I mean, that's the point of life. So meditation is great for me.
Yeah.
And, it keeps me very, at a very, palpable distance from what's happening in the world. Mm-hmm. There are just things that like press a nerve, that send this energy through my body, and it's sadness, it's anger, it's grief, it's shame, it's fear, whatever it might be. And so there's a level of honoring that emotion or unfulfilled process in my body that I have to use in addition to meditation, almost as a meditation. Does that make sense?
In a way. So, yeah. Can you delve a little bit deeper?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you have a specific question, or do you want me to go with it?
Just go with it.
Okay. One of the things that I've learned this year is, again, another shout out to John Wineland and the EMLT program, but it's been incredible. And most of what deteriorates or dissolves my boundaries is all of the unfelt or repressed experiences in my life, whether it's like I didn't get that toy, or I got grounded, or somebody broke up with me, or I got in a car accident, or it was borderline suicidal, those from varying levels of mm-hmm. sadness and anger and just experience in life that I had. My boundaries dissolve when those places are triggered, right? People use that word triggered, and I used to hate that word too.
I know, yeah.
But but it's real. And we got to kind of like work those kinks out. At least that's my belief. And it's working beyond any measure that I could imagine. Like I can't believe the person that I am right now. In terms of feeling emotions and them not getting in the way of what I'm doing, the boundaries that I'm creating in my life.
Right.
But in the past, the trouble was, that's where the boundaries would dissolve. It's like, I'm firm in the, you know, my flag is planted in cement on Tuesday. And then Friday, my bank account's at like $5.
Yeah.
You know, and suddenly the cement is like water and, the flag is falling over. But it's because I couldn't, what I'm realizing, it's because I couldn't manage the whatever I was feeling or the fear, or I didn't know how to process it.
Right.
And it was to the detriment of everything that I was creating. And it's happened like a million times in my life. And who knows? Like, you know, I'm hoping that I'm reinforcing practice well enough to like just be able to move these emotions as they come up. But I guess when I think of process, one level of process is, and I'd love, if somebody's listening to this, I would love to know if they feel this is true for them, but it feels like emotions are what get in the way, our inability to feel and process emotions is what dissolves my boundaries and what I believe dissolves everyone's boundaries. Because when you know what's good for you, you do the thing that's good for you. But when you're like trapped in some spiral of how resentful you are or how afraid you are, then you're going to make resentful, fearful choices.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. And, you know, one point that we've made in the past, when a boundary dissolves, there's nothing wrong with rebuilding it, because if you rebuild it and then you reinforce it, you know what dissolved it in the first place. And so you can protect against that and set new boundaries. And it's the same thing as reestablishing positive habits. Just because that's why I think gamification and streaks can be a dangerous thing. Because you broke a streak doesn't mean that your progress is lost. That is so important. Just because you had, you know, one night of binging and you spent too much money and you broke down the boundary of, you know, not drinking, that does not mean that your progress is lost. That does not mean that you can continue on your path. That's important to state. It's important to understand. For myself, that's a note to self, and it's also a note to everybody else out there listening. Your progress is not lost.
Yeah. I mean, I totally agree, and it feels like when we the reason we believe the story that it's all ruined is because we get trapped in this like shameful feeling,
right?
And we don't know how to process this shame. It's so crazy how it seems to work. Like you binge or something. Like I told myself I wasn't going to spend all this money, and I just went on a shopping spree. I wasn't going to eat fast food. I just ate fast food, and then it brings up all this shame or guilt that.
Now, shame can be a powerful influencer. I mean, it really can. I mean, if you feel shame for having eaten fast food, you set a boundary with that. You make a mental note of how you're feeling right now. You don't want to feel shameful again. It's very motivating if you use it in the right way. You don't want, I mean, to your point, a few conversations ago and in regard to accountability, you know, you told somebody you can write somebody a blank check, and if you don't accomplish a goal, then they can, you know, make a big donation to an organization that you don't agree with. And the same light, you know, if you, in the same light, but a different feeling. I don't know, you can give somebody embarrassing pictures of yourself, and if you don't accomplish something or if you do something which you shouldn't, you know, they can show those pictures to your friend in a sense of shame. It can be very motivating, but you know, you have to use it in the right way. But when you do feel that sense of shame, it's a pinpoint saying, I don't want to feel this way again. What can I do to avoid this situation?
Mm. Yeah, I'm really at like a crossroads with this part of the evaluation. Because I see the value in saying, I don't want to feel X. And so I'll focus on or remember, you know, how it felt to feel X, and then do everything that'll keep me from feeling that. And then another part of me is saying, realizing the true power in feeling it too.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause what's happened for me, I'm feeling a bit shameful in this moment because I feel like, this is kind of funny, but I feel like I'm not sure if we're on track with the place that we set out to have a conversation on, but this is what's alive. But by feeling shame, we kind of like, or fear or sadness, we, we take away its power.
We do.
And we also, learn to, we can like pass that through our body and like, experience it less in feeling it.
Right.
So it's almost like if you would just feel the thing, then you wouldn't have to feel the thing every time you broke your diet or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, I wonder if it's a matter of stage, like what stage you're at in your life. Like if maybe at this stage in your life, you just need to hold on to the memory of what it feels like when you don't do what you said you were going to do.
Right.
And that gets you, and that keeps you in integrity. And then maybe it's also like, okay, you failed. Now feel that failure fully.
Right.
And process it. Like
yes.
not like mentally process it, but
don't ignore
physically
it.
Physically process it.
Don't push it back. Yes.
Yeah, it's an interesting process.
It is.
It's an interesting practice. But I'm realizing there's a lot of value in that. And to maintain, how much time we got over there?
Oh, we're about an hour and a half right now.
No shit?
Yeah.
Oh, we got to wrap this up. All right, that's it, folks.
No, man, finish your thought. You're good. My whole thing is good feelings, bad feelings, neutral feelings. Accept them for what they are. Understand them. Explore them. Don't push them back. Don't push them back with Netflix. Don't push them back with alcohol, with drugs. Explore them. Explore. It's certainly the theme of tonight and the theme of the podcast, I'm sure, but meditation is the key to so much of this. You know, when you find yourself lost in thought and meditation, you don't want, you explore it. You realize it. You ask yourself, why is it I'm thinking this? And then you gently guide yourself back to mindfulness. That is an exercise that you do over and over and over again. And so when you feel shame or if you feel fear, don't suppress it. Don't ignore it. Get an understanding of what it is, how it got there, how you can avoid it in the future, what caused it, and you know what boundaries, what barriers you can put up to not let yourself get back to that spot.
Yeah. Yeah, you nailed it. It's just important to be, it just feels important to be aware of what has the habitual nature of your body and your mind. And then you can, once you understand that, once you start to understand that and have acceptance to it and are willing to play in every area of that, then putting boundaries in there, putting commitments in there. It's not like I need to program myself to be committed. It's just like, oh, I'm committed. And
right.
Oh, and then there's fear. Oh, and this is okay.
It becomes autonomous. It does.
You know, there's just like, sure, autonomous probably as well. But you notice the things coming up and then you process them and the boundary remains because it's not like you get wrapped up in what's happening. And
yeah, I mean, it really, as you practice it, it becomes a superpower. I mean, it really does. And to drive it home one more time with that twisted metaphor, you know, you can see people come, you can see emotions coming from a mile down the road, not when they're barging into your house. You know what is being triggered 10 steps ahead of that actual trigger point, and you know how to remove yourself from it without, you know, even the slightest emotional reaction. It's practice.
Yeah. And then with that, we can wrap it up.
All right, man.
I'm good with that.
Good. This is a great conversation.
This was good. I mean, yeah. I felt really inspired and
good.
I just loved connecting with you and
good, man.
In this way. So
awesome. Well, I'm excited. We've got a lot of exciting things coming up. As I stutter my way through the end, we talk a lot, Ernie and I have talked a lot offline about, you know, how this podcast can have real world implications and even how we can take it outside the podcast, which is starting tomorrow with our meditation class, which I'm really excited about. So I've got very hopeful feelings toward 2020 and what we have to offer and where we go from here.
Yeah, I mean, these podcasts sometimes feel, doing this, recording, trying to have authentic conversation while recording it, while knowing that people are going to listen to it, and just all the shit that's triggered in me and that, you know, the judgments and the fear and the, this is my biggest learning edge right now. And the reason I say that is sometimes it feels clunky to do this. It feels a little bit like rolling on 2 flat tires and, you know, one rim is bent, but they're good, you know, and we're learning through it.
Isn't that what life is, though? I mean,
sure. Yeah. The point I'm making is we're going to be doing a lot of work in addition to this podcast.
We are.
And if you get the chance, if you're listening to this and you get the chance to come to one of those things, it's going to be an entirely different experience of life for you. It's going to be really groundbreaking. The tools that we're bringing, the people that we're bringing together, the inspiration behind it, you know, take these podcasts and use them in your life and then come to the things that you hear us talking about, because it's 2020 is what, November 2019, and 2020 is already proving to be an incredible year with what's happening and the momentum that we're gaining with what we're creating. So
2020 vision in 2020.
I know. I want to overuse that a lot because I really like that idea, but it makes me feel good when I say that, like I got 2020 vision. Like,
I also want to share, my slogan. I think I shared derivative of it. I don't know. So on the top of my wellness spreadsheet, my life tracker spreadsheet, it says live sober, take over. That's my motto for the next year too. For us. I mean, you can drink, but.
Well, I've almost brought beer tonight. I thought, oh shit, he's doing the sober thing.
You can drink, man. Though.
Okay, yeah. Cool. If you see an opportunity to, or if you're interested in what we're doing and you haven't seen the opportunities, reach out. Because this is just the base level of what we're creating. And to experience it in person is going to be an entirely different story.
Yeah, well. Yeah, well.
So join us.
And you can email us at onemosaiclife@gmail.com. One is spelled out, O-N-E, mosaiclife@gmail.com. You can subscribe at onemosaic.life. And it'd be great if you could leave us a 5-star review. If you enjoy the content we create on Apple Podcasts, that helps others discover us as well. And then...
And share it with a friend.
Share it with a friend.
Share it with a friend only if you were listening to it and you thought of them. Like, don't just go share it with a friend. But if you're like, oh shit, Cheryl could really use this information. She was just talking about this. Or,
yeah,
you know, I was talking to Dominique yesterday and he was talking about how he's having trouble with this. Share it with them. It could be powerful.
It can be. And then, of course, you can find us on Instagram, One Mosaic Life. We do our best to post a couple times a week. Been trying to do some added content and video format to just kind of expand upon the things that we talk about and reflect on. And it's, again, this is a learning experience for us. You know, there are times where we're struggling. There are times where we're whatever the opposite of struggling is. I can't think of the right word.
Thriving.
What? Thriving. Thriving. That's the right word. I was trying to make an alliteration and start with a, yeah, that's
perfect. No, this is really cool. Yeah. Because it does feel like it's challenging.
It is.
But what's going to be cool is like a year from now, looking at this and just saying, holy shit, we've come a long way. And then for people to be able to experience that with us.
For sure.
Because the commitment is there. The skills are there. The knowledge, the connections, like, everything is there in the brew, and we're just kind of like stirring right now, getting it all together.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, Ernie, as always, thank you for doing this with me.
Yeah. Thank you, brother.
No problem. We will see everybody next time.
Have a good night.
Or day, or whenever you're listening to this.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.